Accession number 26358.
That's the real three. So you were in the hospital and there'd been a push and you had a load of casualties in.
That's right, yes.
What did they say to you about what had happened to them?
Oh, they were just various ones. The only one I can ever remember, apart from that later when they were getting better and we were getting better, I played pontoon and I lost everything I got. And the only other thing I can remember is an infantry man from the Wiltshire Regiment. He was longing to get back up to the front, only because his brother was there. And I thought, well, I'm not longing, I just want to get away.
What had happened to your brother?
He wasn't in Normandy, he was with the... he was at Dunkirk.
Did he manage to get back?
Yes. He was in the Sherwood Foresters and he got back. Yeah.
Good. So what happened? How long were you in the hospital?
Can't quite remember. Quite a time. I had pneumonia again. Mm. But I had medicine. I had MMB tablets. It was a lot easier. The first time was dreadful. I went through a crisis and just bringing up all sorts. Anything else?
When you went through Belgium and Holland, obviously you were liberating them. So what was the reaction that you received?
Well, you call it liberating. I never thought of anything. I mean, just don't forget, to me, just a young soldier, well, it was just a new experience. And you just hoped you'd survive it, I suppose. I don't even know I really thought that way. But to answer your question, yes, I'm very exuberant in places. Oh, very, 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 oh, yes. Very well. What with going through particularly Belgium and Belgium, at one point I was driving this old open Carden Lloyd thing, you know, with tracks on. And of course it was filled up with flowers and all sorts of things, fruit and stuff, people throwing them over. And I wasn't anywhere near a fighting unit at the time. I felt very guilty. Yeah.
And the people...
Yes, they all had a very, very... And the same in Holland even now, that there are older ones that are quite genuine. French have to be taken a little bit with a pinch of salt. See, Normandy is a thing. There's a lot of history behind it. And in Normandy, remember that during the process, there was a lot of Normandy people lost their lives and their properties were knocked about. It was shocking. I mean, you can't expect that people to be jumping with joy, all of them. And yet there are still, I think, associations and other, and perhaps offspring even, that are, like, for example, the mayor of Saint-Charles-Percy, he wrote a book. Did you ever come across it? Wrote a book about mostly of his area and about the invasion, and it's a very good, well documented book. He's been doing research very similar to you, and he's made a good job of it. It's written in French.
So, when you
I've got it here somewhere.
Great. When you were released from hospital, did you go rejoin your unit?
No. Trying to think now, what happened? No, I went to another unit. We didn't know where, because you see, previous to going into hospital, I'd been withdrawn. I was withdrawn from the line along the Mars after Nijmegen. We didn't go beyond. It was drawn back along to a line along the Mars. I'll tell you a little yarn about that too. Going along shows how well trained I wasn't. I'm going along, poodling along my motorcycle. I had to go to a battalion HQ, which was located right in a village right by the Mars, Bay de Mars. And this time I was given a location, but no directions how to get to it. So I look up my maps and I think, right, I'll go along there. And of course, Pete goes bravely on the wrong side of a hedge, you see, parallel with the river to get to this village. and I'm in sight all the time. No, I didn't get fired or anything. Not until... got into the village and got into this battalion HQ with this message, whatever it was, or this missive, I can't remember what it was. And this officer, youngish, he came down and, which way did you come in? I don't know, I came in alongside the head there, on my matchbox. And next thing is, bang, 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 the village is being stoned. He said, you bugger! He said, you brought fire on us. They spotted you. And now get out into it, he said. Now get on back, he said, get out into it. And he booted me out. Now, I didn't mind. Been used to that. So off I potted and down through the street to get back to my unit. I thought, well, I won't go back that same way, because there were dogs being hit and people hurt too. So I've gone potted off down and cleared off. I thought, nice kind chap. That is very sweet of him. Nobody ever bothered to find out what I knew, and I wasn't trained. I hadn't been taught all infantry Donar tactics. I was just a motorcycle rider. I learnt too late. So that was that. I wasn't very happy then. And later on, of course, I landed up in hospital. And you said, what happened after the hospital? I got transferred, once again, to a unit, a holding unit, in, I think it was a place called Dendermonde.
In Holland.
And if you'll forgive me, just at that point, but I would like very much to mention another incident that registered over the years and hasn't been forgotten, that whilst, when I had joined the Welsh Regiment and I was Donarring, I was in reserve at one time, and this is before what I'm going to talk about now in answer to your question, but there was a point when I was waiting alongside the road while an infantry battalion of the Welsh was, or a company rather, was walking, you know, taking up positions, or they'd had their fresh laundry on, just going into action again, you see, fresh laundry, and they'd been in reserve, and I'm standing by the side there, and all of a sudden I look at the chap leading a little section, and I said, hello, Kenny, my old buddy that I'd known for years down here, Kenny Coombs. And one of the later, and he said, oh, he said, we'll have a night out when we, you know, when we're in reserve. He said, no, I know where you are. I said, well, I'm in the same rotten lot. He'd got transferred into the infantry, but he was the corporal, and he was leading a little section, you see. And so he said, well, we're going off now. And I said, well, cheerio, Ken. Ken goes off with his unit, little section. Well, they were all different sections taking up place, moving forward. And some time later, I'd forgotten all about things, and I was given a directive in Holland to go into a wood with some men and a jeep and to pick up dead bodies, you see. And they said they'd been spandowed. Got that message through from one of the local policemen, said, but don't trust him. I said, no, I said, he'll sit in the front. And here they said, don't trust him, because it, you know, some funny ones as well. And so I had one or two with me, and this jeep, we went off with blankets to wrap the bodies in, you see. And we did, we went down this little, we found this spandau nest, it was, there's nobody in it, it was gone, they were gone. And picked up the bodies, and all of a sudden I realised who one of them was. I looked at his ring, because they were beginning to decompose a bit. And of course that was Kenny Coombs. So that was the night out that we didn't have.
So when you were at Dendermonde, the holding unit?
Sorry?
You were in the
holding. Yes. Yeah. We got to this holding unit. Now we oh dear, this is funny. Yeah, so the holding unit, they were down the road, they were prisoners of war, German ones. Well, I'd all been used to them coming out in places. In fact, at one point in Holland, and they said, if we see any Jerry, don't bother. They're only coming out of the woods with their hands up. And they were too, because they were packing in. Didn't bother go out on a job driving a motorbike, and maybe poor weary thing, they'd be plodding along.
What did you think of them?
Oh, right. I've met some nice ones, nice fellas. And so I did a bit of bartering while I was there. I didn't smoke, you see. Nice bartering me fags for whatever they got, or watch or anything. It got on well with them. I didn't care.
And did you...
That was ordinary Wehrmacht.
Were they sort of old men, young men, or just general?
Mixture. All fed up just the same as we were.
And what did
I was at that point, I was classified, I realised afterwards, as a war-weary NCO. Well, 6 years of it, pretty well always on the go, with one thing or another.
What did you think of the equipment that they had?
What they had? But they didn't have any equipment. Not that you're talking about prisoners.
So
they didn't know, only just their great coats.
But when you came across their armament, did you think it was...
Oh, armament,
how
stuff.
How did it compare to British stuff?
Yeah, their BMW motorbikes were far better. They were good. Lots of things were good. I got hold of a German pistol, you know.
Luger?
No, not Luger. I couldn't get one. They said, you can't have that. You'll get shot if you get caught with that. The MTO said, he said, no, don't wear that. But I did a deal. I got hold of a little MAB pistolet, which I sent home. Little pistol, little automatic. With ammunition, I sent it home to the wife. In case you need, and for any reason. I said, and it got through the post. And so so it's gone now. But I got that because I had not a Luger, but one of the other German ones, which was far better than our old service revolver thing, that they still wouldn't let me have either, and because it was officers. And this one had, I got it, and it the butt of it was a wood, little wood edges, you see, and the butt of it.
Broom handled Mauser.
It might have been a Mauser. It was a nice one, and but it. So I made some wood things that had been banged off, you see, and anyway, made them and fiddled it around. I forget how, what, and I carried it with me because the Sten gun was useless. It stuck around your neck, and if you fell off a bike, which I did more than once, this thing would strangle you. So I carried it despite all the hoo ha, hidden away, but. When I got into Belgium, I also remember Ypres, parce que j'étais là, because at the time we were there, they were still sounding the Meningate bugles, even at that time, in honour of the First World War dead. And there were some white, instead of the Marquis, which was in France, there was the White Brigade in Belgium. And these White Brigades, we'd met up with some of them. I had a nice talking with them, still speaking French, you see. And then one big fella said, look what I've got. That's that little MAB pistol. He said, pooh, pokey little thing in so many words. And I said, well, look what I got. Pooh. Oh, he could murder the whole everybody with that. And, well, not really. But, so I said, okay, I'll swap you. They were very good with her, but then we got on fire. And so I swapped it. And that's where I got the MAB pistol, and I sent that one home in the post. So that was that. Any more?
So when you were in your holding unit?
Yes, holding unit. And then said, what's going to happen to us? So we were interviewed then, one by one. They were all NCOs of all descriptions. And all I wanted was leave. I wanted to get home out of there. I fed up the teeth, see. So, this unit, it transpired that it was that they had there was a major there. He wasn't like a major. He was more like a. He turned out to be a fruit farmer from Worcester. He was interviewing these blokes. I think he was a bit of a.
Psychiatrist.
A bit of a psychiatrist type of fellow, I should think. Very quiet and very, very, very... Anyway, these were going in, and one bloke came out that I'd been talking to, and he said, "Hey," he said, "I've got my ticket." I said, "What?" He said, "Oh," he said, "he was offered jobs, this and that." Anyway, finally, the time came when I had to go in, whenever it was, and yes, this major was there, and he said, "Now, I see you've been regraded, and you've this and that, and blah, blah, blah." He said, "Are there any jobs you would like?" I said, "I don't think so." I was getting stroppy. I didn't care about rank or anything. If it had been Montgomery, it would have been just the same at the time. And he said, "Oh," I said, "I don't think so. I said, I just want to get home." "Oh," I said, "I don't think I can arrange that. And what would you do?" I said, I'd get back to work." I said, "That'd be all right." "You dopey," I didn't know what I was going to do. And after a bit, he said, "Yes. I'll see what I can do then." He said, "I can't promise." But he did. I had my ticket. And came back with an early group.
When was that?
A group 20, oh, very, very early group, about group 6 or 10 or something like that.
So would that have been into 1945?
Yes.
So did you take part at all on the Crossing the Rhine in March 1945? The Crossing the Rhine?
No. I was in hospital, wasn't I?
Okay, so that's...
that time.
So it would probably be...
some of my dates probably need coordinating, I expect, finally.
So it would be sort of early 1945 you were...
Yes.
So was that prior...
The effective date, I think, in my pay book says... September, but that would be the effective date. But I was out before that. I was out in May.
So you actually got out prior to V-Day.
I was out. Was I out prior to V-Day? I can't remember much about V-Day, to tell you the truth. I don't think I did get out prior to V-Day. Mm-hmm. Because I'd had hospital leave. I'm a bit confused about this side of it. I'd had hospital leave and come back. I got back late because of the plane or something. I got delayed on the Sillies because of the plane, because of transport problems from the island, off island to the main island, and then over here. In those days, it was pretty tough. You couldn't guarantee. Anyway, I got back a day late over there, and some little sprat that was waiting in Ostend on a little duty sod. He booked me, and I thought, well, that booked me, yeah? I said, well, it is. So, and that followed that charge. He got me put on a charge somehow. I got his officer to put me on the charge. And but it followed me. To the point when I was being demobbed in Welshpool. I'm aware. And the officer there, I couldn't hear a thing hardly. I told him what had gone. He said, "I don't think..." He said, "You made enough effort to get back, didn't you?" I said, "Well, it wasn't me. I said, it was the transport." And, oh, dear. And he said, "Oh, well..." In other words, forget it. What in the hell was he... What they sending this rubbish on for? And I got my ticket from there. Demobbed, went up to Manchester and had a suit, quite a nice suit, funny enough, because being early, I had quite a reasonable choice. And that was that.
How did you feel after all that time?
Knackered out.
Did it take you a long time to recover?
It's something that's been a bit of a moot point for years, because my poor wife, she must have had a tough job with me, because I mean, you can't tell me that some of your mental processes can't be disturbed after such a long time of that sort of thing. And I wouldn't say I'd be totally easy to... Well, I wouldn't... No, I wasn't difficult to live with. I've never been what I call a difficult type, even to my guessing. But all I know is that she would... Blooming marvellous. And, she died 8 months ago, and we were together 61 years. So
you must have been doing something right, mustn't you?
Yeah. So, she had to take some of the brunt of it. That's what I'm getting at. Mm. And I feel a little bit peeved at the way of lack of treatment. Nobody gave me any advice. Do you know that on the paper that I had, as I was leaving in Welsh Pool, they said, well, you better have this paper. And on it, it said, are you going to apply for a pension? I didn't even know what a pension was, a war pension. I didn't know what it was. And I thought, well, I can't. I'm still alive, aren't I? You know, no, you had to only apply if you're dead, that sort of thing. And I put, oh, no. I put down no on it. And then ages later, somebody said, well, Pete, your ears are gone and this and that. And I still had a huge patch on my chest, in my lung. And when I'd gone up for something to do with my ears, but I said, would I get regraded with that? He said, no, you don't need to. They regraded me on flat feet because I'd gone in A1. It's the army. Just stupid.
And had your ears been damaged by being in the gunnery?
Oh, gunnery, yes, that damages your ears. Normandies and other times you get bombs dropping, you see, and they make a pretty hefty noise. You've got, and then other times, it's all sorts of things about you. I mean, like for Normandy, it's nothing but some of the barrages that were going up. We were fortunate enough to be behind them, but the poor sods that were actually firing the guns, if they hadn't got stuff in their ear, there's so much of it, they must have been affected. There must be an awful number of people that have badly affected, but I bet they didn't get a halfpenny or any consideration to say, well, look, this is obviously a contributing factor to your problems.
So how did you find your transition back into civilian life?
Not very good. Very bad. Not because of my unwillingness, because I would have been a good worker. Exceptional worker as a youngster, and I say that now because I realised I was, and but no, it was a funny affair for a long time, really. So of course today things they obviously seem to be better balanced in certain respects, although I dare say they're still.
So what do you think overall about your service? Is it something that you'd have not missed or wish you'd never been there?
No, what's gone? It's no good wishing anything, but not a bit of good, no. I don't have anything to say, oh, this and that. I've got no particular feelings about it because it's part of a life, it's gone.
No regrets?
Oh, we did Adis Piaf. No, it's no good having. She was quite right. She had plenty of stuff to regret, but she was quite right in her song because it's no good having regrets. It's gone, isn't it? You can say I'm sorry. I wish ifs and regrets, they don't do a lot of good. If I'd known that so and so was got a broken leg, I'd have helped. But I didn't, so it's no good bothering. You know what I mean, do you?
Is there anything else you want to say? Thank you very much for speaking to me today. Thank you.